welcome.
I got a lot of stuff for you today, so we'll see how we do with time, but I've got a few things that I wanted to talk about. So let's begin with Vedic astrology and see what's going on in the sky. This is a major year coming up in a lot of ways. And I'm going to talk about that also. So let's begin with the first major thing that's going to happen this year is that Rahu and Ketu, the shadow planets, opposite nodes of the moon, Rahu north node, Ketu south node. When the moon goes around the earth, the ecliptic is this elliptical pathway that the planets travel on. That's called the ecliptic. The moon spins around the earth, and the moon cuts or intersects with the ecliptic going north, and then goes all the way around 180 degrees and intersects with the ecliptic going south. That moon and the earth go all the way around 180 degrees and then intersects with the ecliptic going north. These two points, north, south, Rahu and Ketu. These are shadow planets. They're not physical celestial beings. They're shadow planets. But they're used traditionally in Vedic astrology, and they have very powerful influences. Though subtle, though shadowy, they are nonetheless quite powerful. Understanding these influences is the challenge, but they are traditionally there in Vedic astrology. They're not the major seven planets. They are the minor planets. They are not. Their light rays or their perception does not fall into the seven rays of the spectrum, beginning with red, ending with violet. Rahu is ultraviolet, which cannot be seen. Ketu is infrared. First part is red, goes to violet. Rahu. So these are very, very subtle frequencies, wavelengths. So Rahu and Ketu always move in concert, and they always go backwards in the zodiac. So they will move. And how often do they move, you ask? And I say, once every 18 months. They change signs. That's not very often. And when will that be? That will be 3 days from now. They'll both move. So Rahu has been in the sign of Pisces now, Virgo, for the past 18 months. And Ketu has been in the opposite. They're always opposite. So the opposite of Virgo is Pisces. So Ketu has been in Pisces for the last 18 months. So now Rahu will move into Leo and Ketu will move into Aquarius. If you have planets in Leo, in your birth chart, in your Vedic chart, and Aquarius, opposite, then Rahu and Ketu will exert more direct influences. If you have no planets in Leo or Aquarius, then their influences will nonetheless be there, but they'll be more subtle and less obvious or less perceptible. What's most significant at this time is that Jupiter, the great benefactor, the guru, the Brihaspati, the great lord, the planet that confers good karma, the best karma, good fortune, the grace of the gods, and all blessings imaginable. Jupiter is sitting there in Leo right now. Jupiter has been in Leo since July of last year. Leo is the sign of the government, a governmental sign. We've actually seen certain governments in the world, not all of them, where there's been some actual reforms or real reforms and some progress made. Not in all. Anyway, Rahu is going to conjoin or join with Jupiter in Leo. Not good. So Jupiter is also the money planet of money and wealth. And if you have Rahu and Jupiter together in your birth chart, in any sign or house, that is a yoga, a planetary combination for bankruptcy, financial loss, or reversal. Does it always happen? Not always, but 9 times out of 10. Or maybe your parents had it when you were young. They suffered it, and so you suffered it, not directly, indirectly, perhaps. But the main point here is, traditionally and historically, and I put this article up, I put it up on Facebook, I sent it out to my mailing list. I didn't send it out to my big mailing list, 3,000 names, 6,000 names. I sent it out to just my small mailing list, which you're all on. So you either read it or you didn't. I did a radio show on it not long ago. I did another radio show last week and doing another radio show next week, but not on these subject matters. Anyway, so that recording I sent out. We are on the verge of another financial collapse or financial economic downturn, whatever. That's what that means. And Rahu enters Leo on the 9th, 3 days from now, and the most important dates here are the yearly horoscope for any country is calculated on or about March, April, when the sun and moon are in exact conjunction in the sign of Pisces. And the Chaitra Shukla Paksha. And when the sun, the male energy, is in conjunction with the moon, the female energy, they produce, they give birth. They have congress, and something is produced. That begins the calendar year in the Vedic system. So you can take any country and calculate that day. In this case, it's April 7th of 2016, and it ends March 27th, 2017. So that, whatever the planetary influences are at that time, it sets it all into motion officially from April. However, Jupiter and Rahu are together from 3 days from now. So January, February, March, you can add 3 months to that and call it 15 months altogether. What's been happening in the world, as I'm sure we all, well, some of us know, is that there's massive debt. They just keep on building the debt. The U.S., for example, as of 2009, I predicted the crash that happened in 2009, 2008, if you will, but Jupiter joined Rahu, I think it was 2009. And I also did the, you'll see, if you read this paper, I did the research for 1929 stock market crash and another crash in 1987. I mean, these are all around Jupiter. Phil.
I've got Rahu and Jupiter together in my chart. I was born in 1987 during the last crash, so I can testify to the financial reversal. Because my parents lost all their money.
There you go.
Do they have to be in the same house?
Yeah.
Okay.
But see that karma now, in Phil's case, that karma may have been paid off. So that does not necessarily mean now that he's an adult and living his own life separate from his parents, that karma must necessarily take place again. So, it's better. It would have been better for him. Not saying it was good but better as a child not being fully aware of what's going on than it is now when we're more aware and, you know, we're keep trying to keep our boat afloat, so to speak. So, yeah, that's a great example. So that's when it begins. And what I was saying, in 2009, the U.S. had a national debt of $3 trillion. So what have they been doing in the downturn, in the recession since then? They have been? They have been printing money. That's what they've been doing. If you and I print money in our basement or our attic, they will take us off to jail because that's not allowed. But if a government does it, it's different. Now their debt is $19 trillion, which means every person in the United States individually is carrying a debt of $250,000, $250,000, as we sit here. Now, how will that each person pay that off in their lifetime, especially if they don't make that kind of money? It's untenable. It's out of hand. It's a form of madness. And that house of cards, that bubble, must burst. Now, I'm not the only guy predicting this. There are many financial people saying exactly the same thing from their perspective. So what we probably are going to have is a devaluation of currency. Right now, the U.S. currency is getting stronger and stronger. The stock markets are already beginning to lose value. The commodities markets, how much you can get for investing in commodities such as wheat and grain and oil and these things, those markets have all crashed already.
I want to stop you, Jim. I was looking at, on a different note, but it makes sense, the history of Versailles with the kings, and France was in debt doing all the rain, and how France tried to get themselves out of debt was going to war.
Yes, that's the last resort. That's also being predicted sort of as an inevitability. But, I mean, look at Syria right now in the Middle East. How many countries are dropping bombs in Syria right now? I mean, you'd need a program to keep track of all the players. You know, that's kind of how it's going. I mean, the way you need to look at this is the whole thing's out of hand. It hasn't been managed well at all, to put it mildly. And there has to be a correction. But we're so far down the road with all this that there has to be a significant correction and or a massive correction. Sitting here in Ireland as we are at the moment, I don't really think we're too worried about war and or invasion, frankly. What it would be good to do is to, and I saw a few of the financial people speaking, not the mainstream ones you see on TV, not those characters. I mean the ones who are forward-thinking and progressive and thinking outside the box. You don't really want to have money in the bank. Because if the bank crashes, or they may come in and take your money, or they won't let you have it, this is common in times of great upheaval and or recession. You say, I want to take all my money out. Oh, you can't have it. Or come see a Thursday and you're not open. I mean, you know, they pull different shenanigans. Myself, I run my account and at a deficit. So when anything happens, I'm not the guy that loses. Anyway, there's a massive correction that needs to happen. What we should meditate on is not the dire circumstance that is very likely going to take place. We should meditate on what we can do to turn it around, as seeing things actually turning around. There's so much corruption in the financial world, and if you believe in the the small group of families that are controlling the economies throughout the world, which I've been studying, and I believe in that now for the last 40 years, and I've seen evidence of it. So it's better to meditate on turning things around, and that honest and trustworthy and good people, because there's many people like that out there, yourselves among them, will somehow end up in control. Yeah, I don't know how all that's going to come about, but that's the thing we should be meditating on. So that's one of the things that's coming up astrologically. We'll see what happens there. You know, I'm not sure of the time frame. No, I am sure of the time frame, but it's a 15-month window. And if there is a massive crash or recession, these things don't go away by March of 2017. Look at this last one. How long did it last? And we're still, there's still a lot of homeless people, for example. And, you know, people are now beginning to get jobs. But that's what's coming up.
So the crash might not happen until the start of 2017. So
No. It's probably going to happen around March or April of this year. But it doesn't all happen at once. It happens in pieces, you know. This thing happened, and that thing happened, and this bank failed, and that bank failed, and this country failed. You know, that's how it happens. It's not just... But it's pointing in that direction. Okay. Mercury goes retrograde. When? Yesterday. Mercury travels retrograde from the 5th to the 25th of this month, whenever Mercury goes retrograde. Contracts, communications, agreements, travel, computers, computer systems, technology, phones, you name it, fail or break down. There's all kinds of problems. You lose your luggage when you fly. Possibly. Not always, of course. So Mercury retrograde is just, just causes problems. I've had stories from clients living in Hawaii that tell me that a gecko has got into the inside the computer and got fried and ruined all their computing systems. It happened twice, they say, not once, but we got it fixed. And in the same Mercury retrograde period, another gecko got in and it happened again. So, anyway.
Suicide watch for their geckos.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why they go in there, just to hide, or maybe it's warm, you know, they like to eat. Okay, so those are some of the things that are happening. Then on the 14th of January, we have Makara Sankranti. The sun has, I didn't expect to speak about this long, but hey, it's our time. The sun has a northern and a southern course, the Uttarayan and the Dakshinayan. When the sun travels in his northern course, he is considered to be most favorable. And that is the time where the gods are the strongest, the devas, the good people, the good-hearted people, those who are here to make a difference or at least not damage things and others, people who are honest and truthful and simply want to do good or be good. The Dakshinayana is when the darkness or the negative forces can be stronger, for example. So we have what's known as the winter solstice and the summer solstice. The winter solstice is on or about December 22nd, 21st, 22nd. And the summer solstice is June. 21st, 22nd. Solstice means what? Literally, what does that word mean? Sol, el sol, is the sun, solar. And sti comes actually from Sanskrit, stita, situate, to stop, to be put on the brakes. So the sun is moving in his southern course, and then he begins to move in his northern course for 6 months. Northern course, and then 6 months, southern course. Makara Sankranti, even though the winter solstice is December 22nd, Makara Sankranti is always celebrated in India on the 14th of January, no matter. Actually, if you calculate it, it is the 14th of January. And that means the sun enters the sign of Capricorn. That is considered to be almost like the new year or the beginning of the positive time. It's also, in some places, considered to be the harvest. Yeah, north of India. Not here, but... So it's a very favorable time. So that's coming up on the 14th. When the sun moves from one sign to another, which happens when? Once every month. On or about the middle of the month in the Vedic calculation. The day that the sun moves, one is because of the energies involved and the disruption or the shifting of the energies, the solar energies, one is supposed to do nothing for the 8 hours prior to the movement to 8 hours after the sun moves. So the sun moves on the 14th, I think it's like at 7 o'clock at night, pretty sure. That's supposed to be, I mean, that would ideally be a day of just meditation and chanting and spiritual practice. So that's also coming up, Makara Sankranti. Any questions, any comments on that?
The sun moves every month on the 14th.
Yeah, the sun rises. Now the days are getting longer. That's what the Uttarayana, or the sun's course traveling north, to the north, in the northern direction. The days get longer. And the sun actually moves 1 degree a day. 1 degree. So 1 degree times 360 plus, you know, throw in your 5 and, you know, they figure it out in decimals. So that's what the sun does. So every day now it gets brighter, and by a minute. So sunrise is 1 minute earlier each day. Churning the ocean of milk. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, there is an absolutely wonderful story, or from a Vedic point of view, a history, known as the Samudra Manthan, the churning of the ocean. And the demons and the gods, Yahav, the dark forces, the demons or materialists, they're called demons. Daitya means demon. They're not necessarily demons in the worst sense of the term, that they're demons or monsters. It means more like somebody who is not very improved in character, who is manipulative or controlling or envious. Or devious, or goes behind your back, or says one thing and does another. That's really what we're talking about here. We're not talking about people who are just materialistic necessarily, because there are many people who are materialistic. They won't hurt anybody. They don't necessarily do anything that's, you know, negative toward anybody else. But there's very, and then again, of course, there's varying degrees, varying grades of everything. So one time, the gods, which are the devas who are here, like the angels, archangels, the higher beings in the heavenly planets. There are such beings. And their job is to more or less run the universe, look after things. Somebody's got to run it. Just like any corporation you ever look at, someone's running it. It's not headless. It's not just happens by energy. No. Somebody runs it. So the gods did something to anger the sage Durvasa, and he cursed them. And he cursed them to have a reduction in lifespan. The lifespan for those living in the heavenly realms, these are the earthly realms where we live. And then you got the hellish realms or lower realms, where darker forces exist. So he cursed them to reduce their lifespan. Lifespan here is very, very limited. Death comes very quickly. Whereas they live for a long, long time in the heavenly worlds. Really long time. So they approached Vishnu, God, in the milk ocean in the universe. There are, according to the Siddhanta Shiromani, an astrological text, the different oceans are described as follows. There are seven different oceans in the universe. How many do you know? How many have you seen with your eyes? The salt water ocean. That's the one. The first one is the ocean of salt water, then the ocean of milk, the ocean of yogurt, the ocean of clarified butter, the ocean of sugarcane juice, the ocean of liquor, alcohol ocean. That would be very popular with some. And the ocean of sweet water. Sweet water means just good, just clean water, regular water. So those are the seven oceans in the universe. Vishnu in his form of Kshirodakshayi, not exactly this Vishnu right here, that's Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. But if you remove Brahma, it would look like Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, who is located in the ocean of milk. This is the aspect of Vishnu or God who enters into the heart of all beings as the Paramatma, the Supersoul. Inside each being is a Atma, a soul. That's your very self, your selfness, your identity. Next to the soul is the Paramatma, Supersoul, Supreme, Parama, Supreme Soul. And God sits there as the Sakshi, the witness. Watches everything. Says nothing. Never interferes. Can you imagine? All the nonsense we get up to. Never says a word. Never interferes. And some of us, we wouldn't even want to mention some of the things we've gotten up to. Doesn't say anything. Doesn't judge. Doesn't judge. He's just waiting for you to go, where'd you come from? That's what he's waiting for. So, so Vishnu's there. So they approach Vishnu and they say, look, we have this problem now. Durvasa has cursed us. We need to increase our lifespan again. What can we do? And Vishnu says, you must get your hands on soma, soma rasa. Have you heard of soma? Soma is also known as amrit. Amrit means nectar, but it means that which gives life, life-giving nectar. Amrita. Mritam is death. means no death. So it causes an expansion or extension of life. So this is what you need. You drink, they drink the Soma. The gods do. They don't have it available down here. At Tesco. You cannot get it. Even during the Christmas time. So Vishnu says, well, it can't be done alone. You're going to have to approach the demons, the daityas, and get their cooperation. Some things, he says, must be done in concert with negative forces. And you have to sometimes cooperate with people or forces you don't want to cooperate with. You don't even want to hang out with, but sometimes that's the only way it's going to work. That's what he tells them. So they agree. You have to churn the ocean of milk. And churning the ocean of milk will produce the soma. The soma will come out of the ocean of milk. And then you can drink it. And this will restore your longevity. Oh, okay, fine. How do we churn the ocean of milk? Well, you have to set it up like a butter churn. Like the old-fashioned butter churn with the ropes they used to do. The stick and the paddle inside the bucket of milk. And they go like this, right? And the paddle goes back and forth or around like this and churns the milk. And the milk becomes
butter.
And butter is the highest essence of milk, of the products you can get from milk. And milk is a life-giving food. So that's what he says you have to do. But you have to churn the ocean. Well, how on earth are we going to churn an ocean? It seems impossible. Well, that's why you're going to need all the demons and all the gods churning together. So the main thing about, well, I wouldn't say the main thing, but the thing about this is it's an allegory for the churning of the subconscious mind. Through the churning comes purification. And it means to give up the lower nature and all the negative things that will come up from the subconscious. Beliefs, behaviors, conditioning, fears, anger, frustration, wounds, whatever. From just this lifetime? No. Because the subconscious contains all the knowledge and everything from all lifetimes that you've spent. So it is a beautiful allegory for the churning of the subconscious, purifying the mind. As the unconscious mind becomes purified of all darkness, undesirable traits, bad habits, and limiting beliefs, a surprising transformation occurs. And from that, many wonderful things begin to unfold in one's life. The more you purify your mind, your heart, the more you are expanded in consciousness, in conscious awareness, the easier it becomes, first of all, to be happy, to be peaceful, to have clarity, to be calm, even in the face of the news I just gave you. We don't have to go into fear about that. If you're connected to God, if you're connected to who you are, if you're following your life purpose, if you're on your path, why do we have to be fearful? There's no need. So the more we purify ourselves from our lower nature, the more we step into our higher nature, and the less affected we are by everything around us. And when you have desires, your desires will manifest like that. When you are in your higher nature and higher consciousness, things happen easily and far more quickly. Okay. So there's a, the demons and the gods are symbolic of the struggle between good and evil. You know there's a struggle between good and evil. That's what we were talking about astrologically. Is that not the struggle between good and evil? Greedy, manipulative people and the financial system and everything else, the economy, are causing problems for everybody. So that's an evil, a form of evil. So good and evil does not just take place outside of ourselves. Well, that's an evil person, that's an evil situation. Yeah, maybe. We are struggling against good and evil, or light and darkness every day within ourselves. Our lower nature, our selfish nature, our self-centered nature, our lack of compassion versus being compassionate. It's a constant struggle, isn't it? So that's even happening within you, never mind this person who lives, your neighbor. So that's the symbology. Okay. Another way to look at the ocean is, the milk ocean in this allegory is, or your subconscious mind, is your unrealized potential. Who here, when they look at themselves, honestly, who here has unrealized potential in their own mind? Anybody? Well, most of us. Not everybody. Most of us do. Yes, almost everybody has unrealized potential. So when it is stirred up or distilled, as they're doing with the churning of the ocean, it yields a refined creative potency or essence, the soma, by means of which all creative ideas and all manifestations of imagination and desire can be brought into being. Wait and see what comes out of the ocean. Vishnu was well aware of the need for the cooperation between the gods and demons, but he also knew that, he said to the gods, you're going to have to accept whatever requests the demons have, you have to accept them. What do you mean? You're going to have to accede to their request. Are you willing to do that? Okay, we'll do that. There's so many wonderful things that's going to come out of this ocean that three attitudes will arise within your minds that must be avoided. Number one, the simple desire for the attainment of the object. Do not desire the object that comes out, whatever it is. Be detached from that. Two, do not have greed for the thing, to have these things for yourself at any cost and without regard for others. Do not, worse than desire is going into the greed. I have to have it. There's no, I have to have it no matter what. And then frustration when you do not achieve a desired object, which degenerates into anger. Frustration that's held for a long time becomes anger. And then, how do you know if you have any demoniac tendencies? If you're envious of anybody. Why does he have that? I don't have that. It's not fair. That's a lower tendency. That's a classic tendency of a lower nature. So he says you have to be very careful about these things. Of course, the demons, they have them all. They have all of them. Okay. So in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Trividam narakasyedam dvaram nashanam atmana kama krodha tata lobhas tasmaditat trayam kyajet. These are the three gates leading to a hellish existence. lust, anger, greed. Every sane person should give them up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. Chapter 16. Okay, so that's what he said. Just let them stuff come out. Don't worry about it. So God's approach to the demons, a truce was agreed. Now they have to find a churning rod. So can you imagine? You have to find a rod with which you can churn an ocean. So they said, well, there's a great mountain over here in this place far away. We got to go get it. It's called Mount Mandara. Perfect. Tall mountain. They got this mountain, Mandara, and they had to carry it a long ways to get it to the ocean. And it was made out of pure gold. That's why it was ideal as a turning rod. Unfortunately, it was quite heavy. And what happened was, as they carried it, they became exhausted and they couldn't carry it anymore. And the mountain fell on them and crushed them all. And they were all, most all of them were killed. End of story, right? Well, that was an abrupt end. So Vishnu had to come along, lift the mountain off of him, off them, which he did. He was riding on Garuda, his eagle carrier, half man, half eagle. And he lifted the mountain off of them, and then he brought them all back to life, rejuvenated them all. So, number one, they have to ask Vishnu what to do in their original predicament. Now Vishnu has interceded again to bring them all back to life when they drop the golden mountain on their heads. Then he took the mountain on the back of Garuda and flew to the Milk Ocean and set it down in the middle of the ocean. Okay, now we're in business. So God did what God can do. So now they needed a rope. Well, they don't make ropes that big. So Vasuki, the king of serpents, agreed to be the rope. They approached him. He was told, Vishnu said, ask Vasuki, see if he'll do it. Vasuki agreed to be the rope. The gods went and grabbed the front part of the snake. They wound the snake around the mountain a couple times. The demons grabbed the rear part. And the demon said, wait a second. Why do you get the front part of the snake and we get the ass end of the snake? No, that's not good. And the gods said, well, Vishnu said we have to do whatever the demons want. Well, I don't want to do that. Well, we have to do it. So they exchanged. And they gave the demons the front part, which is by the head. So they began to churn the mountain in, and it began to churn the ocean. And the snake coughed and sputtered as it was being squeezed, and all poisonous fumes were coming out of its mouth, and the demons were going, oh, this is terrible. So they got the raw end of the deal on that one. And they churned as vigorously as they could, and the mountain began to sink down into the middle of the ocean. And it stopped and it didn't turn anymore. You couldn't turn it. So Vishnu came along and he says, okay, now you have another problem. You need a base, you need a solid base for the mountain. So he says, I will come in my form of Kurma, the turtle body, but God face, and I will, human face, and I will place the turtle, the mountain on my back, and I will be the support for that. So that's what they did, and they began to churn. Now it worked. It worked very well. So this went on for a long time and nothing happened for the longest time. Finally, yeah, and they became dissuaded. They became disappointed and they lost their interest. So the meaning of this is when you're following a spiritual path, one gets distracted, disappointed, disillusioned. It's difficult. It's not easy. It takes time to bring about these kinds of changes that you're hoping to bring about. And one way or the other, you have to keep on going. So even though you may wax and wane. So finally, with Vishnu's help, all of the beings that were in the ocean, like all of the aquatics and the fish and the sharks and the whales and everything else, started coming out. These are representative of thoughts, beliefs, ideas, impressions that you don't need. And all of those started to come out. Then a very dark poison came out, this dark black poison. And it came out almost like an oil slick on the ocean. It was coming. And a lot of it. So Vishnu said, we'll have to find somebody who is willing to take the poison on, because if one drop of it touches the earth, it'll destroy the earth. And so they had to find somebody who was willing to handle the poison. So who volunteered for this? Do you know? Shiva. Shiva takes the role of the destroyer. There's three roles in the universe, in life. Creation, maintenance, destruction. Everything goes through these three phases. Everything. In the material sphere, Vishnu himself, as a manifestation of Vishnu, he is in charge of maintenance. The creator is Brahma. He creates all the diversity within the universes. Vishnu maintains it. Shiva, who is another very, very powerful being, kind of next to Vishnu in order, Shiva brings things to an end. He dissolves the dissolution, the destruction, endings. Everything comes to an end. You know, just like now we're approaching winter, so all of the life that was, all of the life that, you know, the leaves and the trees and the flowers and so many things have now gone into some form of hibernation or suspended animation. That's Shiva's job. So Shiva can handle that kind of negative energy. That's his job. So he agreed to take the poison. And he agreed to swallow it. So he drank up all the poison on the ocean of milk. And his wife, Parvati, put her hands around his throat. Because if he swallowed it, it would kill him. Oh, it's too much. And she plugged his throat so he couldn't swallow it. And all the poison was held in his throat. And subsequently, his throat turned blue. So since that time, he's known as Nilakantha, which means blue-throated one. And that's where he kept the poison. So this poison is what? What is the symbolism?
Destruction.
This is the darkest stuff coming out of you. The very darkest stuff. Whatever that might be. Because on the spiritual path, that has to come out. So different people, different things. So in this case, it was, you know, the ocean. So there was a lot of that that had that had to come out, and Shiva took it on. So another way we can look at this is, give it to God. You turn it over, you surrender it. Because Shiva is an aspect of the Godhead. Then, from that time forward, the good stuff started to come. You got to the point where you've let go enough of the darker energy, then the good energy will come. So one of the first things that came out was the Surabhi cow. Surabhi cow is a wish-fulfilling cow. The cow in India is sacred. Holy cow. Why? Because it's just a silly thing to have a cow that's sacred. No, because a cow is actually symbolic of the mother. It's a mother figure. And that's why the cow is considered to be a sacred animal. Why is cow a mother figure? Because after a child, a baby, a human baby, comes off the teat and stops breastfeeding, cow's milk is actually the best food for a time before solids are introduced. I mean, that's just historical. So that's one example of the cow. Milk can be turned into cheese, into butter, into yogurt, many things. And the butter is then purified into ghee, clarified butter, which is Madhuri, who's an Ayurvedic doctor, could tell you all the wonderful properties, the healing properties of ghee. They are numerous. But the cow was given to the sages because they need the ghee to perform the fire sacrifices, where they pour the ghee into the little spoons of ghee into the fire with mantra as an offering to the gods. So that's been done for thousands of years. So the sages were given the Surabhi cow. Surabhi means wish-fulfilling cow. Does she give milk? Yes, but the milk she gives fulfills any desire you want. Doesn't just, you know, let you drink the milk and make you stronger, but fulfills every desire. So that's what came out first. And as Vishnu said, do not desire anything that comes out, because different things will be given to different persons. So that's what happened with the Surabhi cow. Then the next thing that came out was Uchaishrava, a beautiful white horse, as white as the moon. Uchaishrava means rising glory. So now, this isn't just a horse. This is a heavenly horse. So we had the king of the demons and the king of the devas. Who's the king of the devas of the gods? Indra, who's the god of rain, thunder, lightning. And who's the king of the demons in this particular story at this time?
Bali.
And we know the story about Bali when Vamana or Vishnu asked for three steps of land. He said, no, let me give you something substantial. Not just three steps of land. I can give you gold and jewels and lands and kingdom. No, three steps of land. And he covered the whole universe. That was that. So Bali, and he surrendered to Vishnu. So Bali was it. Even though he comes from a demon tradition, a demon genealogy, you can find very good people who come from those backgrounds, just as you can find negative people who come from good families and good backgrounds. All right? So Bali was given the horse, Uchaishrava. Next that came out, to come out, was Airavata, the elephant with many, many, many trunks. And he was white also, like the horse. And Indra, king of the gods, was given the elephant. His name means lightning. He possessed four tusks and resembled a mountain. He had the ability to travel anywhere in the universe. Indra took this elephant for his vehicle. The elephant is symbolic of strength, intelligence, memory, and wealth. Here, the two kings of the demons and gods, Bali and Indra, respectively, are shown honor by being given the best of the animals or vehicles that emerged. The allegory also demonstrates that as the mundane mind becomes purified, one's power, courage, strength, intelligence, memory, and wealth will also improve and increase. That's the allegory. Next came a couple of celestial gemstones, the Kaustubha gem and the Padmarag. The Kaustubha, it resembles a pearl, or like a Mabe pearl. You know what I mean? Half pearl, cut in two, with kind of a rounded top, and in that is carved a calf. Let's. And the Padmarag is what stone, do you know? Ruby. Vishnu took these two stones for himself, and he was wearing. The Kaustubha resembles a pearl. That's what kind of energy? Masculine or feminine? Very feminine. That's moon. Moon energy. And ruby is... So pearl is connected to the moon. And ruby is connected to
the sun.
Masculine energy. If you want to strengthen your career, your confidence, your sense of self, your ability to succeed, to make impact in the world around you, in career, profession, you wear ruby. Women should not wear ruby, in my 39 years of experience. Women can wear garnet, the semi-precious stone. Ruby, they become like a praying mantis. They eat their husband after sex. No, that's what a praying mantis does. So, it's too much. It makes women too strong. Don't recommend the ruby. Okay, the next thing that came out was the Parijata flower, which you can only find in the heavenly realms. It has the sweetest fragrance, they say, from any flower. I don't know. I haven't smelled it. And it is a wish-fulfilling flower. By smelling the fragrance of the Parijata, it fulfills all desires. Can you imagine? I want this. Boom. You have it. So the Parijata came out. The symbolism here is that the purified mind can deliver one's desires very quickly without so much difficulty, time, and effort being required. Look at the effort we as humans undergo to achieve what? Whatever we do. And sometimes we work on things for years. Mm-hmm. It's understandable. But can you imagine just manifesting like that? That's actually what we can do as souls. Why aren't we doing it? Because we don't believe it. Because we're all covered over. We're corrupted. We're covered in various kinds of ignorance and disbelief and insecurity and chip on the shoulder. Yeah, I'll show you. And other kinds of limiting beliefs. And this stops us from manifesting things instantly, which is our birthright. No offense, but some of us are a long way from that point. But the more you spiritualize yourself, the closer you get. Now we're making progress. Who came out of the milk ocean? Lakshmi Ji, the goddess of fortune. Well, in our house, she is everywhere. Here she is at the feet of Vishnu. There she is on the far end of the altar next to Vishnu. There she is on the painting above. She's everywhere. So the goddess of fortune came. Well, what does she look like? You've never seen a woman this beautiful in your entire life, be you man or woman. Drop dead gorgeous. I mean, she is so beautiful. She is beyond beauty. And all the gods and demons, who is that? Well, they all wanted to, you know, jockey for position. Hey, little lady. Trying to get her to notice them. Well, she walked by the entire row of demons, didn't even give them a look. They didn't like that. Then she walked by the entire row of the gods. And she looked at different ones. Well, this one, he's very attractive, but he thinks he is. And this one, so many different qualities she would look at. They all had some superlative qualities in some category, but they weren't well-rounded. They had insecurities, or they had some negative qualities or areas that they hadn't developed. So she walked down the entire row, so not being interested. And they were all crestfallen as she passed. Each looked at each one and then went on to the next one. Finally, at the far end, there's Vishnu. Now, Vishnu is not acting this way over Lakshmi, because Vishnu is always detached. What it is, is. You can take it, you can leave it. And if we can be that way with everything, that puts you in a much more powerful position. That's because you can accept things as they are, which we as humans have a hard time doing. Well, she walked up to Vishnu, she took a look at him, she could see every single wonderful good quality present in Vishnu. Well, he's God. I should hope so. And she gave herself to Vishnu. Of course she did. She's supposed to. She belongs to him anyway, in that sense. So there was Lakshmi. The demons were beside themselves because they didn't even get a second look here. So what is the symbology of Lakshmi here? If she's the goddess of fortune, she is the... There were different things that were wish-fulfilling, but she is the personification of wish-fulfillment. Yeah, well, she's the one that will fulfill all your wishes. Plus, she's... You know, we all are attracted to beauty. And we all want relationship. We all want loving relationship. So this is the epitome, the essence, the summit of that experience. Because you've purified the mind enough on the symbolic side. Okay. So, demons were beside themselves. So who came out next? Varuni. The goddess of intoxication with the pot of liquor. The pot of Guinness. The pot of wine. Varuni is wine. The pot of wine. Because the demons like liquor. in intoxication. And it has a similar effect to soma, but it doesn't necessarily increase the lifespan. So, but when she came out, they were given the wine, the liquor. So they're quite happy with that. And then, finally, who came out? Dhanvantari. Dhanvantari is an incarnation of Vishnu. Came in, I think, two-handed form, right? Four-handed or two? Four-handed form. Carrying this magnificent golden pot of what? Soma, Amrit. Dhanvantari is the patron of what Vedic art? What Vedic science? Ayurveda, science of life, longevity. That's what it said, Bhagavatam. So, Ayurveda, Veda meaning science or knowledge, from Ayur is the root Ayus, which means longevity, long life. So, it is the oldest system of medicine on the planet, nothing older. And it is the most complete system of medicine, and is generally, not in every case, but generally non-invasive. Madhuri is a doctor of Ayurveda, so she knows all about this. That was the soma. That's as far as we'll go with that story.
I just asked before.
Yeah?
If the final object came out of the ocean was the was brought out, was connected to Ayurveda, and the soma is what gives you the greatest longevity, the greatest life. Would that mean that by churning the ocean in your mind, the ultimate goal of that is this greater longevity that you get out of that?
Yeah.
So that's the key for health as well. Then.
Yes. Well, leading a life of temperance and balance and eating well and, you know, looking after yourself is obviously going to have a much better effect on you in terms of your health and longevity. If you're ill or your life is cut short, if you die untimely, then you can't do what you came here to do, or you can't complete it. So the point is to stay healthy, and you're not supposed to, I mean, people do grow old, of course, and they get diseased. Not everybody gets diseased. So it depends how you conduct your life. So Ayurveda is the science of keeping the life and the health in balance. And the more spiritual you are, that's not to say that spiritual people can't get sick. They do. But, you know, this is a whole science in keeping you healthy and sustaining your life. Long life is good karma. Short life is not good karma. Untimely death, death before your time, is not good karma. You know. If you die, if children die before their parents, that's not good. Yeah, go ahead.
What is the purpose of that? I had a nephew who, you know, his life ended very violently at 20. So that was his karma.
Some karmas are cannot be turned around in the sense that they're going to take place. Other karmas, there's an option where, depending how you behave, it's going to determine. You know, you see on the internet these days people are doing really bonehead things, really stupid things, and sometimes killing themselves. You know, all you had to do was not do that, and they'd still be alive, for example. You know. So, in some cases, yeah, that is the karma. In other cases, there would be an option about, you know, whether that's going to happen or not. I know I've seen that with clients where sometimes you can give them a warning and they can avoid some serious situation, and sometimes that's not enough. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to churn the ocean of milk in your mind. Sit in a meditative posture or as comfortably as you can, please. Close your eyes, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax, and let go. Allow the stress, the tension, fear, apprehension to drain from the body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. Clear your mind. Envision yourself now on the shore of the ocean of milk. The big, huge, beautiful, tall, the golden mountain, Mount Mandara, is there in the middle of the ocean. You see the big serpent Vasuki wound around the mountain. On this side are all the demons by the snake's head, and on the other side are the gods by its tail, and they're churning away. You see Kurma, the turtle incarnation, beneath the mountain in the sea. And you are standing at the shore of the milk ocean that is being agitated by the churning. Now, without making a decision, just allow your subconscious to show you, to provide an image. First of all, something negative, dark, unwanted comes out of the ocean. Do not choose it. Let it appear. Let your mind, your subconscious, show you what comes out. What is it? Look at it carefully. If you can't see it, sense it. Feel what it might be. Don't decide what it is. What is it? Examine it so that you know exactly what it is, or how it's shaped, or if it's animal, vegetable, mineral, whatever it might be, whether it's animate, inanimate. How do you feel about it? Is it something that you want to let go of? Are you ready to let go of it? Do you know where it came from? Why it was there to begin with? All right. When you've done that, we'll let that go. Clear your mind. Breathe, relax, let go. The churning continues, and now something wonderful comes out of the ocean for you. What is it? Don't choose it. Don't decide what it will be. Allow it to come out. What is this thing? Animal, vegetable, mineral, animate, inanimate, that has come out to enhance your life, your existence. Is it a thing? Is it a quality? What is it? Most importantly, how do you feel about it? What difference will it make in your life? So continue until you've done these two things, negative quality, positive quality. And when you're finished, you can open your eyes and return to consciousness slowly, peacefully, comfortably. Was everybody able to do the meditation? Anybody want to share theirs? You don't have to. It's up to you. Who's first?
So the negative side that came out wasn't, it was more like an energy, like a dance of darkness and lust and sort of the negative side of what the female aspect is of the darker side of what is the negative. So it was more like a shadow dance of that being shown. And then on the positive end was Lakshmi. She came out as the same type of essence, an energy, a dance, but like more of a warmth and a comforting, where she didn't need any of the thoughts or wants or need that comes with the darker side of what the female aspect of it.
Mm. She's vibrating on the higher side of the feminine.
Yeah, much higher, much more comforting as a man to feel that.
Yes, because one drains your energy and one fills you with energy. So yeah, they're very different. Men don't really realize that, but they're very different. How'd you feel about that?
The negative energy made me feel sort of like a...
How'd you feel about releasing it?
Oh, much better. Like I didn't want it. When I came out of the ocean, I didn't want it there. I didn't want that energy. But it was nice to see it just sort of be pulled away and taken away. And that they enlightened my own heart and head at that moment.
Good.
First one was very strange. It was like, you know, the film, was it Stanley Kubrick, where they have like a black, just going through, everyone's the film with a black square?
Kind of box.
Yeah, it's a black box.
Thousand one.
Yeah, black box. Dripping in black came out like a square. Then next it was a spider. It's very weird. And so that was a negative thing.
Well, what is that? What does it mean?
No, first it was abstract. I thought it was this black box dripping in black and a square. I didn't know what it meant. I just thought, scared of it, kind of negative. But the black box was kind of impenetrable. It felt like a kind of, like a Kubrick.
Maybe okay.
Too much Kubrick,
so,
like universal.
If you just see that black box in your mind's eye,
yeah.
Now just feel.
Okay.
Don't think.
Okay.
What is the emotion underlying that black box? What emotion is there for you?
Maybe it kind of felt like a past or something.
What kind of past?
Yeah, a past, like a negative past or something which I feel maybe...
Okay, but you don't know exactly what it is.
I felt maybe it's something really longing, kind of, if I've had a lot of lifetimes, I don't know, but I felt it was kind of something which...
Okay.
It's kind of, couldn't kind of... Maybe, I don't know if I can... Don't know if that's
okay, right. It seems to me that it's... it's not revealing itself to you.
Yeah, which I feel maybe.
You know, what's inside the box? Can you open it?
It's just got black.
I mean, it's like a cube.
It's a cube, yeah.
Like, well, it's got to symbolize something.
Right.
And we're it's not showing us what it is yet. And it, obviously it's something connected to the past. Now, spiders, for many people, they're very afraid of spiders. On the other hand, spiders spin webs.
Okay.
And if you're caught in the spider's web, if you're an insect, you don't get out.
Oh, they both try. Yeah.
So it may have something to do with spinning a web that created this black box
that
you trapped yourself in, or that you felt trapped in. So it's good that it came out, that you're letting it go, but I would suggest you need some more information as to what it is we're letting go. But still, it's good. And then the rest of it?
Oh yeah, the last thing then. Out the water, it's really cool. There was like loads of diamonds, and it's a female body, and then like a bit like yours, that's why I come to go next. It was actually, she's amazing, but it was like this massive light, and light to like loads of rays, so she was coming out almost like the, you know, the one that comes out of the water, again, probably watching too many things. The goddess, you know, is it Primera, who comes out, you know, from the creation. But she was like coming out, but all the diamonds had these amazing rays, kind of. So it felt really light, and it felt like kind of this kind of really dazzling, penetrating, kind of positive light, which I thought was really nice.
So, diamond is connected to which planet?
Venus.
Venus.
Yeah.
Creativity. Art. Beauty. Relationship. The feminine, the ingenue, she's a curator at an art gallery, by the way. So, and diamond is the hardest substance in the physical world, right? Diamonds are
forever.
De Beers' motto, diamonds are forever. There you go. Beautiful. How'd you feel about that?
I felt really happy. I felt really smiling. And I felt like it was very light. It felt very light. And it felt like it could, you can kind of, in a way, take away consciousness. It's really light. And you're kind of, it's just rays that kind of, all I can describe is it starts really
well, light. It sounds like it had within it all possibility.
Yeah, it felt like it was kind of
right.
Yeah, like a kind of really.
It was a matrix of possibility.
Kind of, yeah, which I suppose now, as I see it, which sounds really obvious, the opposite to cube. Yeah, it's kind of weird how it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't kind of think of it. Yeah.
Well, if you think of geometric shapes, I mean, the diamond is, you know. It does outstrip the cube.
Thank God.
Thank you.
You know, you want this black cube or do you want this diamond?
This drapes.
Drips with wealth. And by the way, what I didn't mention at the beginning, gold, silver, precious stones, land, food, these are real wealth. Not currency. Forgot to mention that. Now that the diamond has appeared, we're not too worried about you.
Okay.
Going forward. Very good. Someone else?
I had some herbs for the negative, and I had belief for the positive. So that's just
what kind of herbs? No, we don't know.
I don't know. Just herbs.
Smoke? Do you smoke herb?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Is that a good thing or not a good thing for you?
I don't know, to be honest. It's not a fully positive thing, you know.
So you think it might have a connection to that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then for the positive?
Belief.
In?
Just belief. Just a belief. It was like the negative was blocking the positive.
Mm-hmm. I know people that I've met in the past, I'm not addressing this to you per se.
Yeah.
If there's too much smoking of herb going on, it slows things down.
Yeah.
People don't get done what they need to do. They kind of get caught up or distracted.
Yeah.
And I've seen people that are real capable and have actually really, really ingenious plans, but they don't quite manifest if they're too much on the smoke.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that applies to you, but it's interesting that it somehow it's connected to belief in self.
Yeah.
So does that ring at all for
you?
Yeah,
it does. Yeah.
Excellent. Very good. Anybody else?
My negative was like a kind of a woman, you know, the woman like Medusa with
yeah.
all the snakes coming out of her head. So she was kind of like a crazy woman.
Medusa, by a glance, would turn anybody to stone instantly. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Oh. That's a stone cold woman. Okay, Anne, you're letting that go. What did it represent?
It felt like it was really just craziness, like too much.
Too much. Crazy. She's got all the serpents
she's
going.
All the serpents.
All this kind of thing going on, you know.
Like, yeah.
There's not a lot of peace of mind there.
Yeah. Definitely not. And they were coming out of her head. I know. And
I know.
Yeah. So she very happily went. I very happily let her go.
Wonderful.
She wasn't resistant. She was like, bye-bye.
Yeah, no, okay. Nice knowing you.
Yeah. And then the kind of, the good side then, because you said, you know, don't decide what it is and, so my mind.
Well, you understand what I mean. You can't. If you decide, you're just picking stuff.
Yeah.
This kind of meditation.
Be like whatever
possible. You have to allow your sub. It's your subconscious that is presenting these things to you. That's the power of this meditation. If you're just picking stuff, we're still in the conscious mind.
Yeah.
And it's not going to shift anything. You know, you can tell me what your favorite color is. That's all very nice, but you know, won't shift anything. Sorry.
So it was very. It was just staying. It was like all gold, but it was like a blanket of gold.
Wow.
And
do you wear it, or what do you do with it?
I didn't put it on, but anything that was coming up under the gold. So it was just coming up as kind of gold. It wasn't. There was nothing kind of coming out of it. It was just like this blanket of gold. And then it was like Lakshmi kind of came, but came up with the gold.
Hmm. So you had the Medusa, and we had the Lakshmi.
Yes.
He had the shadow dance, and he had the Lakshmi dance. How'd you feel about the blanket and the Lakshmi?
Yeah, it felt very, it just felt very solid. That's like a thing. It just felt very, there was a calmness, but it was different than just calm. I don't know how to describe it. It was like, it was very all-encompassing.
Well, the first thing that emerged seemed to me something monstrous, dark, like the mother of fear.
Mother of fear.
Mm-hmm. Stepped back into the water and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing was a beautiful man.
So. What's the emotion there?
Love. Mm-hmm. I haven't connected that.
Huh?
I haven't put those two together.
Fear and love? Or... fear creating a situation where love can't come in? Fear of love or fear of the wrong kind of love? Well, they're related somehow or other.
Absolutely.
They gotta be above. Yeah, they gotta be related. Because once it's juxtaposition. So even if you don't think they're related, believe me, they're related. So with these meditations, you go and you meditate on the meditation. You can go and continue yourself and take the meditation to the next step. You don't need to be sitting here to do it.
At the end of that meditation, I feel like I was asleep and I woke up again. You made it feel that deep, so I was like, oh God, I feel like I'm actually...
Good. Well, you might... You see, normally when I do guided meditation with people, it's the whole thing. I mean, you take them into about 10 minutes worth of relaxation and to get them in deep.
So that's chilling out, that's like a...
Yeah, well, that's the way you have to do it to get into the subconscious. So some people can get into this. You know, it's in fairness to you, this much time of relaxation, it's very, very short. That doesn't mean you can't do it. Well, you're going into an alpha state. That's what you're doing. And you should be doing. And we want to sort of get out of the way and let the subconscious. It's a very powerful technique. Why don't we chant Jai Radha Madhava and call it an evening.